Hey, are we live? Are we good? We're solid. We're on the air. No technical difficulties today. I mean, I got a janky setup. I got the hoop in the background. We're gonna do some big dunks, I'm sure, you know, or win all the prizes later. But yeah, welcome to episode 50 of Rec Radio. We got Scott Melker with us today. We'll probably just talk about some market shit. I don't know, but why don't we introduce the sponsor first?
I think we got a bit of echo. I don't know if one of you two has got the echo.
I just threw the phone. You know, maybe I do it weekly. What the fuck?
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We are sponsored, as always, by Rollbit. They are probably the most well-known crypto casino out there at the moment. You can degen in several different ways, casino, sportsbook, futures trading. We've been sponsoring them. We've given away over $500,000 of prizes over the last year. We will be doing prizes at the end for anyone who followed the instructions in the show notes tweet. Let's get into it. I mean, it feels like we're ripping for Thanksgiving. I know you got involved, KBM. I know you caught this long, as always. It feels like we're about to hit.
Was that sarcasm? That sounded like sarcasm.
That was heavy sarcasm, yeah. We both know you did. You were not.
No, I actually caught it on ETH, but not any size. Yeah. No, I covered the short. I didn't cover the bottom, but okay. I did okay on the scalp short yesterday. Anyway,
it feels like we're gonna hit new highs. Maybe, maybe even during this show. Like, what was the high for ETH?
I think the high was like, where's the ETH high?
Yeah, 2130 area for ETH, and then we're close to the Bitcoin high as well.
Yeah, like, area and ETH, yeah.
Bitcoin's close, yeah.
Capo's tweet is the signal.
Did he tweet today? Yeah, he tweeted at the bottom.
Dude needs to have a baby with Jim Cramer and just set off the bull market indefinitely.
It is hilarious. Like, he just continues to think he's right. It's like, that was the other one. Adam Cochran did the same thing yesterday, where it was like gaslighting the whole community on the way up and then calling that he's called the top. It feels like feels like we're going to keep on going higher, to me. Anyway, Scott, I know you do a daily show. Maybe we'll get into your background a little bit, but yeah, what are you thinking of the markets here? You've obviously been through a few cycles before. How does this feel like versus some of the other ones you've done?
Yeah, I think if we're on the Wall Street cheat sheet, we're in disbelief right now. You know, I still, maybe people are starting to get optimistic. I'm not sure, but somewhere at the bottom of the curve before things go parabolic, I think a lot of people have been surprised how early this has happened in the four-year cycle, because everybody kind of is married to the idea that we have to wait for the halving before the market pops off. But I think that things are different this time because obviously of the ETF approval and a lot of the other good news. I think the Binance resolution is massively bullish. Like, I think it was Flow Horse who had the joking tweet yesterday, you know, Jesus died for our sins, CZ died for the bull market. Like, dude literally just like took the sword, fell right on it for everybody, because this is the best resolution we could have had in that. I think Binance slowly got marginalized over time, you know, as they kind of got kicked out of different countries, people started to fear the worst, institutions pulled off the platform. So they became a much smaller part of the market in general. Over that time, instead of it just being like this massive collapse where 80% of the market share was looking for a new home. And then to have a resolution, we know that they're going to continue. They're going to be literally watched by the US government for the next 5 years with a monitor. It's like, remember when SVB collapsed, there was like, this is the worst fucking bank in the world. And then a day later, they're like, well, shit, they're backed by the Fed now. This is the best bank in the world, right? I think that that's the vibe with Binance. You know that like everything they do there is going to be above board. So like, I think the market's just going to keep ripping for a while, man. I don't really see anything technically or fundamentally any reason for it to drop. And I think that people are also in disbelief on stocks, been calling for this recession and depression in general. We've been in up only mode regardless. I get where Capo's coming from, like not technically or market wise, but I think all of us, I don't know how old he is. I don't know how long he's been around. I think it's unfortunate that dudes get shit on for their like predictions, you know, but like there was a time in all of our careers, I would say, where we were way more emotional than intelligent, you know, when it came to markets. And imagine like if you had that, but also had like millions of people following those opinions and watching it. I think when you have a Twitter personality, whether it's an avatar or otherwise, like it's much harder to detach from the emotional side because you're bringing other people along with you, you know?
Yeah, well, he's definitely like entrenched in this view now. And if he flips, people just shit on him for flipping. So it's like,
yeah, I think he needed to go down, you know, the ship. Yeah, he needed to identify a level like where he would have rationally flipped instead of just saying, oh, but. Like for me, it was like, we get above 25, it's on, right? Mm-hmm. We made a new higher high since 69K, it's on. Prove it to me otherwise. You know what I mean? I think you need to have an invalidation or you're just emotionally attached and you're not really trading, you know?
Yeah, you make a good point. This is how I used to always distill markets. It's like, what are the main known knowns that you can get wrecked on? And when one of those goes away, it's normally quite a big deal. And Binance was always in the background. Like the only other things I can think of right now are, it seems as though the government's got some Bitcoin to sell, but that seems maybe short term. And it seems like
bullish
selling. And then you've got this, you've got the Mt. Gox to sell. But like these feel like,
dude, I've been hearing about that shit since 2016.
You buy any dip that causes, right? And then like the more systemic stuff is, there's always rumors about things like Tether, but I think that's absolutely fine. I think Tether's fine. They make like $4 billion a year at the moment. It's like crazy how much money they're printing, 5% on whatever, 80 billion of reserves. And then I just don't really know what else there is now. Like who else is left to liquidate that we have to really be worried about?
I mean, DCG is the other fear in the market, but I think that's already expected. Genesis already went bankrupt. Grayscale seems to be in productive talks with the SEC about a conversion to an ETF. Listen, my feeling about even all of these is that there's been this massive cleanup. It's ahead of election season. You know, the politicians are trying to get their look. They're embarrassed by Sam, whatever it is. But all these bad actors, not talking about like the SBFs and shit that like were literally committing fraud outright. But like, I think CZ, maybe Tether, all of these, they were just acting in a Wild West environment with very little regulation when they started. And what were they supposed to do? Like wait around for regulators to give them rules, or they were supposed to build? And I think they did a lot of things that were probably sketchy along the way. But in that process, they got this massive magnifying glass spotlight on them over the last 2 or 3 years and cleaned up their act and are probably some of the best companies around at this point. So like, I agree with people who are the Tether truthers who are like, oh, this company's fucked up, they'll never do a full audit. I don't think you're ever seeing Tether's books from 2017. You know what I mean? Because it was probably like backed by commercial paper from China and all the shit that everybody said. But right now, they're benefiting massively, as you said, from, you know, T-bills and huge yields. One of the most successful companies in the world. There's no reason for them to fuck around at this point. So like Binance, maybe at some point there's a punishment for something in the past, but I don't think it really is preventative for the future.
Yeah, I completely agree. It feels like right now, I mean, back in the past when I started reading about, you know, that commercial paper program and no Wall Street bank seemed to have a relationship with them. It was like, oh, maybe this is in some questionable jurisdictions, but it feels like now you look at their, at least what they are saying, and it's mainly T-bills. I think their commercial paper program is much smaller now, and by nature commercial paper rolls off very, very short term anyway, so it was always going to be more of a short term exposure. But yeah, I'm not really that worried about that. I was surprised by the SEC lawsuit this week. Like, they seem to be wanting to go again. Like, it feels like I thought they were going to lose that Coinbase and it was going to get tossed out because they seem to be. But then they seem to be going again against Kraken. Yeah, that was Kraken. Like one that threw me off. So I was like, why?
And Kraken just paid a fine a few months ago, like $30 million or whatever it was for their staking program. I mean, everyone I've spoken to, Kraken kind of knew this was coming. My feeling is that the timing is never a coincidence, right? You saw how Gary did Binance and Coinbase back to back. Well, you notice the one person that wasn't standing on that all-star lineup stage last night of regulators and Janet Yellen and Merrick Garland. It's the cuck, Gary, who was watching himself get fucked over in the corner, right? And so he was like, shit, they're gonna do this, I gotta get my Kraken on today. And so I think he rolled out the Kraken suit. What's crazy is in the Kraken suit they say that there was commingling of funds. Like, that's an alleged, I don't believe it by the way, but that's like alleged fraud, and the market just shrugged it off. Like, price action tells all, man. Nobody cares about what the United States government has to say about crypto. That's like a 6 month ago thing. It was wrecking the market back then. You, like, when you saw the Coinbase action and the Binance action, any altcoin that was named in those dropped 30%, right? They just named it. It was like unregistered security without ever actually going after those companies, doing anything. Now it's like they go up. It's like, you called us an unregistered security. Like, what, you know, hold my beer. And so I think that even if the worst comes with those other companies, nobody really cares. The market doesn't react negatively to that kind of news anymore. I think we've done it. We've absorbed it. We know we'll get through it. Now people are optimistic in general. The one thing that I think can wreck the market in the short term is a outright rejection of the ETF. I think that would be pretty bad for price.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He wants that heat, right? He just doesn't want it. And also this commingling of funds, like commingling of funds, you don't have that in norm financial institutions. Like, unless you have a, let's say a money markets fund where your fund is literally segregated. Like if a bank goes down, all your funds are commingled. That is a pretty high benchmark, I think, even to suggest that everyone should have their own segregated account at an exchange. Maybe it sounds like a dirty word, but that's kind of how most financial institutions work. They're not like segregated.
I just think that people expect that there's a wall. You know what I mean? Like they can both be within the same institution, but in separate accounts and such. I mean, listen, after SBF, you gotta be skeptical, yeah. I think, of everything. The dude literally like used FTX as the piggy bank for his, clearly Alameda was his company and FTX was his piggy bank for Alameda. And he was just whatever the opposite of God tier trader. Like, you know, like I was going to say, just horrid trader, absolutely atrocious. And just no matter how much we could feed him, he could just throw it into the casino and lose. You know, he's that dude who's like in the casino the seventh day with the free room, just dumping it in and like, dude, no, don't, we'll cancel the jet. Just, we got the whole top suite for you another day. And you know, that was outright fraud. So I think everybody's just a massive skeptic now of everything.
It is wild. It's
full martingaling, that one. Even the Kraken CEO doesn't even care. I mean, I'm pretty sure he said that it was blatant extortion by the SEC coming in. So
nobody's scared really, of Gary anymore. Yeah,
no one's scared.
So how did you get the name? Like Wolf of All Streets. Like how did this all begin? Maybe go into a bit of your background.
It was a joke. So like I started trading or buying stocks, I should say, literally when I was 13. Like every dollar I got, I bought Apple or Caterpillar because I thought that Mickey Mouse and tractors were cool. It was literally like that, you know. And I had an older brother who was 4 years older who was slightly into it. And my parents gave us at least a basic sort of financial education. But I was definitely also at that age, the dude like playing cards for money against my friends. Right. So it was like a money thing. And I was kind of always, I think, natively a gambler. I went to the University of Pennsylvania and it was the late 90s and everybody was going to Wall Street. Like I wanted to be a DJ. I was an anthropology major who thought I was going to be like Indiana Jones or some shit. And then I realized that doing archaeology was just lifting rocks and it sucked. And so after doing that for 2 summers, I decided I didn't want to do that. And like I had a job at Solomon Smith Barney to go become an investment banker. And I decided to like DJ instead, you know, and I basically did that for 20 years. And on the side, I just traded horribly for like 2 decades, you know, but that's kind of how I got into it. But as for the name, when I had my daughter, which was not expected in 2016, I literally like was... trying, I was so bad at the idea of parenting that all I cared about was like if my wife was gonna have the baby fast enough that I could go play at South by Southwest with Future, because like I was going to open for Future the rapper, and I was like, dude, I gotta get there. Like, and so she was born, she came home the next day, and I left 2 hours later, and I had no idea what that would feel like. And that day, I was like, this is the worst thing ever, I'm done, like, I'm done DJing. So, obviously, I had trading. And I was just discovering crypto. A bunch of DJs were into it. They were like, it's this unicorn land of 1,000x pumps. We thought that you didn't literally have to pay taxes on any of your gains. It was like a complete, you know, at that time, that was the assumption. It was absolutely wild. But so I had this like big Twitter following, maybe not huge, but like 40, 50,000 people from my music. You know, that's where I'd gotten the blue check when that actually mattered, like back in 2010 or 11. And so all of a sudden, because I'm basically an idiot, like I just stopped talking about music and pissed all those people off. Like I posted all the charts because I've been charting, but I used to have like 7,000 lines. It looked like a Pink Floyd like light show or something on my charts, just the worst. And so half of them unfollowed me like outright. So it went down to like 20,000. But then I guess because I had the like blue check, which gave me credibility for no good reason because it was actually from music. And because I started talking about crypto so much, I started to sort of build the following there, but I would constantly get the like, shut the fuck up, DJ. Like, you know, jack shit about trading. What are you talking about? Stay in your lane. Right. So at some point, some dude had tweeted at me, I think it was Whale Panda, one of these big dudes, like who was on Twitter. He accused me of, that I was not really me, that I had bought my account from some DJ to get a start. And Charlie Shrem, who was my friend at the time, was like, dude, I'm like I was with Scott 2 days ago. Like, this is literally him. But it was then it became this huge thing because you see it once that I was not really me. I had bought my account from some DJ like to get the followers or whatever. And he said something about like I was a fake Wolf of Wall Street or something. And I was like, bitch, I'm the Wolf of Wall Street. It's like as a joke. And then people started calling me that like after the tweet, it was him or someone else. And so then I like changed the name and it just stuck. It was never an intentional thing. Literally nothing I've ever done in this space was intentional. It all just sort of happened, you know? So like, I can't claim I'm like some God tier businessman who had a plan for building up a, I just like got really passionate about it and started talking about it. That's where the name came. I don't really actually think I'm the Wolf of Wall Street. There's a lot of things I suck horribly at. So, you know, trading was one of them for a very, very long time. So, you know, whatever, but the name stuck.
So have you two met on the DJ scene? Like, do you still DJ?
I mean, I'm not really on the DJ scene there, Mando. I think I've DJed like four NFT events and like a local club in Miami.
But you'd be more likely to see me, I guess, at a crypto event now than a DJ event. So it's
there
it's
you
likely,
go. Exactly.
I don't think so. I really like I dead ass pretty much quit. Like, you know, I would take the big sort of money gigs or something that was high profile for the next maybe year after that, just because like had to pay the bills and stuff. But I really turned it off and pretty much quit. So we
what
never
kind
met.
Of music were you spinning out there?
I mean, dude, after 20 years, I went through every single phase. I started at as a trance, like a hip hop DJ first, and I became a trance DJ because I found, I don't know, drugs. And then I had this huge party in Philly that was called Air Trance, and we brought in like all the biggest DJs in the world. I was 22, and then we got sued by Air France, and they shut us down. And just like and for using their logo, and I was like, nah, I don't do trance anymore. They shut me down. And so I went back to hip hop, but it became more of like a just wildly open format. You know, like, you know how I was one of the first dudes who like did the really sort of ADHD girl talk, like aggressive mashup style and stuff. And I used to do it live on turntables. And that's kind of what I became known for, was like really quick transitions, a lot of scratching, a lot of like just the real high energy parts of each song and not really letting them, you know. And so that's sort of where it ended. But I, you know, at the end I was playing corporate events. I was even doing like the right weddings and shit. I could play anything, you know?
So I'm just kind of putting two together. You must have introduced a lot of people into crypto because you've obviously had this very famous podcast since then. You like the Wolf of Wall Street podcast, which you brought on loads of different people. I didn't realize that was your background. So you must have brought on a bunch of mainstream people even to talk about crypto, think about crypto. Did you bridge? A lot of people must be happy with you right now. Like,
no, I mean, there's people who love me and there's people who hate me, right? Because I think a lot of the people who got in at those times, either like they lost their key. It was such a wild west. Like, you lost your keys, you got wrecked on one of the platforms that I liked at some point, or like, as did I, right? I mean, I lost literally millions of dollars on Voyager, you know? And so like, I was one of their top 25 creditors or something. So, I mean, I think it's a mixed bag, but I definitely was long before I was like, I don't know, influencer, what do you call people that are in crypto? I don't know, or a podcaster or any of that. I was just out there yapping about this stuff endlessly to anyone that like would listen and I could find. And like I said, it was actually really big in the DJ community. I think those dudes are like largely degenerates. They're kind of outcasts. They're huge risk takers, obviously, in life to, I think, be doing that. So, you know, I think that, yeah, I probably brought in a lot of people. I mean, I think I've definitely brought in a lot of people through the podcast and the shows and stuff, but there's people my YouTube is very small relative to a lot of, obviously, the other people and stuff. So,
yeah, there's been a few DJs that have made that transition. Like Aoki, I think Calvin Harris even did an NFT drop towards the top. Yeah, there's a few. You obviously caught it early. So yeah, maybe let's go into like your podcast as well. Like what have you learned over, how many years have you must been doing it?
I started my podcast literally like a week before COVID hit in like that March. And so nobody wanted to hear about crypto at all. It was like the most miserable, beginning. I was literally like interviewing COVID doctors and shit because nobody wanted to hear crypto. I was like, I guess I'll talk about COVID, right? I'm like locked in my house. So it started like March of 2020. And later the YouTube and all that came. I mean, I've interviewed thousands and thousands of people. I mean, to me, like my approach, I think a lot of people in the space want the influence. They want the clout. They want to be the ones like delivering the alpha. They want to be the guy who shows you the dopest trade. I tried that for a while. Just not for me because like, you know, people aren't going to trade it the same way you are. They're not going to place their stop the same place you are. 4 years later, they're going to be talking about some shit that you were trading for like one day. you know? And so I really sort of transitioned from, I trade a lot, but publicly trading or sharing things and seeing the market move if you tweeted about something, right? Got rid of all of that. And really my focus is interviewing people and them delivering the alpha. So I think what I got really good at, what's unique, is that I like to just ask the right question and get out of the way and let the guest really talk about that core competency that they have, that one thing that sort of like brings that glimmer to their eye. And so I really view like doing the podcast as a free college course with the best professor for an hour. Like for some reason, this guy is going to sit down with me for an hour, let me ask them anything, learn anything I want. And then like by osmosis or proxy, my audience will learn the same things and hopefully I ask the right question. So every single one of my YouTube shows, even, and it didn't used to be that way. My streams used to be just me like charting for hours. Like literally I would chart, like today we're going to do the first 100 coins on Binance. I used to, it was called Chartapalooza was what my streams were called for all the first years. And now every single one has a guest. You know what I mean? That's all I do. I ask a guest questions. And then at the back end, I bring on a trader. They share their charts and shit and their alpha. And I ask questions. It's just much more comfortable in that role. I never want to really be the one like giving the not financial advice.
Yeah. So you have people from all disciplines or is it mostly crypto right now?
So at the beginning, it was like
at one point.
Yeah, at the beginning, it was like literally everybody. Now it's pretty much just crypto. Like, you know, it's and honestly, it's become like on the podcast itself, it's become just really focused on much bigger names. Like on the YouTube and on the streams, I'll let a lot of different people on. I think it's really interesting. But now I really try to focus on like the biggest names in the industry, try to get the politicians and the people who are really moving the needle. You know, like there's not that many, to be honest. So it's hard. I used to do the podcast 3 times a week. Outside of YouTube. Now I do it once a week outside of YouTube. You know, he was showing like Raul Paul is a great example. The Michael Saylors, you know, we're trying to get like work. Kathy Wood, the politicians that are pushing the needle, the Patrick McHenrys and Warren Davidsons and all those guys. That's who I like to interview because, you know, they don't talk to this audience that much. And I feel like at least I can speak to them in their language and get the real kind of juice out of what they think of what we're doing. So when it is like not a crypto person, they're at least superficially involved in it in some sort of way or talking about it.
Yeah, that's some big game hunting right there. Those are the big game hunters with the big alpha. What's a recent alpha? One nugget. Do you have anything that comes to mind?
Well, Raul, like he's been on the Solana road show, I guess, whether intentionally or not.
Yeah, he was on
this
show.
Intentionally.
Saying it, yeah.
Yeah, and he got like I literally had like a Solana boner after talking to him. I was, you know, I was like, Jesus Christ, man, this, yeah. I was a huge Soloner, 2 inches at least. And like, you know, he talked about Fire Dancer. I was like, what's a Fire Dancer? Those are the guys in Hawaii, right? And he just got me really sort of bullish on the idea that that could be the ecosystem of the next cycle. I didn't buy anything, but like he definitely, the way he delivered the sort of his speech, his stump speech on Solana really got me sort of excited and paying attention to that. So I think that was, of all the ones I've talked to recently, that was kind of the real alpha that I got. And I'm sure you got the same, you know, you got sort of the same speech.
Yeah, he timed it well. He timed it very well. Like he came on, well. I think, as the NASDAQ was like having 8 straight weeks of it going lower. And then I think Bitcoin and ETH were both having a little bit of a wobble. And I think Solana was trading like 30. And
he did time well. He said that would be the bottom of the NASDAQ. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he came on raging bull. And
I think I poo pooed it a little bit. So I'm embarrassed here now.
But it was, he has timed it well. This time for sure. I think Solana's obviously been the main call. I mean, Solana could really go, right? I agree with all this Fire Dancer stuff. Like if it has a million TPS, like that could.
I mean, it seems like developers hate it, but I don't think that, I guess that doesn't matter if a number go up, but I just get.
Girls hate crypto and it's done fine for us. So whatever.
Very true. No, I agree that Solana does have, it could be carving out a big piece of the industry here, especially if it gets like.
But that said, I think a lot of people are now saying, you know, Solana is the next Ethereum. This cycle will be all about Solana. Like last cycle was all about Ethereum. That shit gives me like real excitement about Ethereum. Like I'm really, really, really bullish on Ethereum right now and have been for the last couple months because I think it's lagging and it's getting that irrational FUD that I love to hear. The like, it's dead. It's they have some sort of like some guy says they're going to get sued who used to be there. And it's going to zero and security and all that bullshit. Like when you start to hear that, I'll never forget buying Tesla at 180, but with the same mentality, I was like, Tesla's 180. This dude's smoking weed on Joe Rogan. People are saying the cars are exploding, which mine almost did last week, by the way. So I guess they were right. I was just delayed. And then, and price is going to zero. And it was like the deadest bottom that I bought of Tesla, just based on the total sentiment FUD that people were having. That's kind of how I feel about Ethereum lagging now. I think it will absolutely blast off.
Yeah, it seems like somebody's in there today, T-wopping it, and got a lot of relative strength today compared to everything else.
It was the first thing to full. Now it's way over. I'm looking now, yeah, but it was over. It was the first coin. I tweeted about it literally this morning. I said I just kind of looked at all the majors.
You could feel
and this
it.
Is yeah, and this is higher than the open yesterday before all the Binance news. Everything else has retraced like half of that sort of daily candle. So it was looking really good. But I've been feeling that way about it for a long time. I think if it gets above like 21, 21.50, it's just
There's a lot of blue skies in that and Bitcoin both from the whole FTX collapse and all the black swans that occurred with Three Arrows and whatnot.
We are at the Three Arrows price. We're at the Three Arrows price. I mean, this is like 3AC was 38K. You know what I mean? So like don't mistake the importance of the level or why this is such strong resistance because we're
that
back.
Big breakdown level is right here. Yeah. So it's like once it gets above that kind of blue skies for a little while into the 40s minimum Bitcoin. Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel like we're not going to do a raging bull session, but yeah, I do think that if ETH gets above that level, we could definitely go. I agree with you. Like one thing I've been noticing again is like the last 3 weeks, it's been really deflationary again, and you start to see like the stuff that narrative picks up again. Like it was getting FUDded so hard because it was inflationary while everything else was rallying, and it was like, oh, you know, this isn't quite working, and now everything's burning again. People are using ETH. All the other coins around it have moved and everyone's saying it's not working and it just feels like it could run. So yeah, it's definitely recapturing that. I know you say you don't like to call out some of the smaller coins, so maybe we won't talk about that. But in terms of the other themes you see in crypto right now, like the ones that could sustain the bull market, like what are the main things you think are going to drive this? Like what sectors should people be looking at?
That's the right question, by the way, because people are always like, what coin is going to be the best performer of the next cycle? And I sort of laugh and I'm like, some shit that doesn't exist yet that we don't even know about, right? Because it's always something shiny and new with no supply and no like bag holders and community and sellers that launches into the next cycle. But I think that there's a few ways to sort of look at this. I think the buzz right now is around real world assets, right? You see like a lot of the institutions, a lot of that, by the way, will happen privately on private blockchains, like a JP Morgan Onyx type thing. Franklin Templeton, one of the biggest asset managers in the world, has already tokenized $300 million worth of T-bills. I mean, this stuff, it's small for them, but these are relatively huge institutions that are really making waves in tokenizing these real world assets. So how that will be investable, I don't know. A lot of people think Link will sort of be a leader in the real world asset space. I think there'll be a lot of platforms that are doing that. I think that'll be a big narrative, but I also think like we shouldn't discount some of the huge narratives that had their little moment in the last cycles, because I always kind of say, you know, humans are terrible at the beginning. They expect that I'm going to buy this thing. There's this narrative. It's going to happen right away. So they're terrible at realizing how long it's going to take for something to actually mature and start, but they're equally bad at understanding how exponential it'll go when it does. Right. And so most of them get stuck sort of in that, I think, in that middle ground where they buy a little too early and then they sell before it actually goes parabolic. So like we had DeFi summer, maybe DeFi is actually mature in this cycle. Right. We had the NFT craze with the PFPs. Well, maybe the real world asset side and the sort of maturing of NFTs will really happen in this cycle. Maybe we'll actually see a metaverse where you're allowed to have legs. I don't know. Like maybe that'll happen this cycle and the metaverse will be happening. So I think really, everything that we are gaming will be huge, I think, this cycle. I think gaming, like we either need a triple A game that exists to adopt some sort of NFT or crypto side, which we haven't seen, or we actually have to see a triple A game that's built on a blockchain or natively to crypto for us to get really, really excited about that. That couldn't have happened in the last cycle. It was too early. Those games take hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, 5 years to build. So like we were just too early. The expectation that it would happen right now was too early, but I think that we'll start to see all of those things really mature in the next cycle. I don't know if there's like a brand new narrative outside of each of these past things kind of maturing and finding their lane and also finding which blockchain they're going to be on, right? And where they'll really capture that. So I would just look at all of those main narratives and try to choose who you think might be a winner moving forward in each of those.
I would agree with what you just said, though.
Mute me. Sorry, I'm trying to fix this.
Yeah, I think that's such a good idea, is that people think, oh, I need to buy the current existing coins. Like, I personally think, yeah, there are some good gaming coins out there, but like the real ones that will rip will be just like the new one that comes out, or there'll be a new coin that captures a new trend that we see, maybe in like social fire. Like, you're starting to see that, like someone comes up with an idea and it just rips, like like you saw that with Frentech, you saw that with a few of these, and that's the sort of stuff that I think is going to move. And I think particularly in gaming, like a new game or one of these big studios starts to move again back into this space, you're going to see coins which just dwarf the current size. So I'd be very wary just like going onto CoinGecko or CoinMarketCap and just like, oh, look, I'll just buy this basket of gaming coins, because actually you can kind of get wrecked doing that. You're buying somebody else's old bags, and they maybe didn't even deliver on the project from the last market. But I do think that gaming, I think, is a sector where if there's a new coin coming out there and it feels hyped, that thing could do 10. We've already seen it, like Big Time's done it. There are a couple of projects which are catching good bids, like Prime and Alluvium, but it's really the new coins which I think could like go monstrously high on that. I think RWAs is a bit more like TradFi, so it's a little bit difficult to get like as degen-y, like that it does feel like we brought by, you know, like you said, the main financial institutions, but there'll be some people that try and degen that as well. Like, well, I think I saw today there was like tokenized uranium on the blockchain. Like, people are going to go wild on some of the stuff. Like, it's people are going to start tokenizing stuff, and they're gonna send it for sure. I think that's a very, very fair assessment. You did say that, you know, that you traded badly at the start. You've gotten better. You've gotten burnt. Like, what do you think are the main other mistakes people should be wary of making this cycle, and maybe some of the mistakes you're trying to like eradicate from your own style?
I mean, I think I've eradicated most of them by focusing on the longer term, taking profits slowly, and not just being completely bull-tarded at the top. You know, like the last cycle, I was definitely one of the, and I got hell for it, but I was definitely like, oh, this ship broke 65, it's at 69, it's going straight to 100. Every coin you've ever heard of is quadrupling from here, and it was the top, right? So I don't plan on doing that again, although I can't make any promises. I certainly think that learning to take profits slowly and along the way at predetermined levels, if you have longer term positions, is really, really important. I think a lot of people come in, they think I need to buy the bottom or sell the top, or buy all at once and sell all at once. And that just puts so much pressure on you to be right. And when you're thinking about being right rather than making money, it becomes very, very hard, I think, to be profitable. So if you actually can like remove the emotion, have a plan, because you make your best decisions before you're in the position, right? Then you become emotional about the position. So I think if you have a plan and actually follow it, all the disasters we know happen when you have a plan and then you're like, nah, I'm going to move my stop, dude. You know, and we've all been there. I think everybody's done that in the past. So I think, you know, I've loaded up, I think, pretty heavily on the bigger names sort of throughout the bear market, just like the slow dollar cost averaging type accumulation. And then I think that as the market becomes sort of more cyclical, which it started to do now, then I'm just going to rotate capital through and see where it sort of lands. But I'm pretty much fully in at this point, right? I don't have any dry powder sitting around. So now it's going to be sort of, you know, taking some of that ETH or some of that Bitcoin and moving it into smaller things when it feels like the cycle is right. But like, I mean, dude, I got wrecked so many times, you know, in like 2000, in 1999, when I graduated college, I'm going to be super responsible. I'm like putting $5,000, all the money I had in the world, in a mutual fund. And like by 2000, my landlord was asking me for 4 months of back rent. And I sold it for like $1,500 because it was like in the depths of that bear market, you know, and like cashed it out with a penalty or something. And then 2007, I finally got money after this big DJ tour, like finally got out of all that debt I was in. And like bought the dead top of the market before the Great Recession, you know, and just that one I rode luckily. So eventually got it back, but I was completely wrecked. And then I got out of that into like, it was must have been 2012. There was this pharmaceutical stock called Arix, A-R-Y-X, 11, 12, somewhere, maybe 13. And I mean, I had like a friend who said he had a friend who was, you know, doing the clinical trials and they were going to change blood clots and some shit, dude. I don't know about blood clots. And so I put everything into it, right? It was listed on it was like $6 and it was listed on exchange. Maybe a week later, the CEO like gets on the quarterly earnings call, completely wasted, is like, bro, we're out of money. Like, I think we're fucked. You know, I'm like, shit. If you think it's bad to like ride a crypto coin to zero or to like see a coin get delisted from your favorite exchange, try doing that with the stock exchange. Cause I did that, right? I rode that to zero and a delisting. And so, because I was like, nah, man, the clinical trials, you know, my dude says that the thing. And so like, I was out of the market for a very long time after that. So like, but now I'm pretty unemotional about it. I've become somewhat robotic. Like I took massive like losses in the contagion, as I said, from Voyager and stuff. And I pretty much was able to brush it off, you know? So I think that the next sort of cycle, I'll just take all those lessons. No matter how long you do this, I think you find yourself slipping, you know? The one I would say is just don't, like, I'm sorry, Robit, but I would say if most people just don't use leverage. It's like really, you know, like you're still in the game if you don't use leverage. Like there's nothing worse than being in a leverage position and losing all your money and then seeing the market go the way that you expected, right? So, you know, for me, that just, also I'm American, so like it's not like I could find somewhere to do that, right? And so you know,
staying in the game
Gary is listening. Yeah, like, you know, I love when people are like, you got everyone wrecked, that shit's down 80%, like Bitcoiners. That's always the Bitcoin maxis are like, you promoted shit coins, that's down 80%, you got people wrecked. I'm like, Bitcoin's down 75%, like what the fuck are you talking about? We were all telling people to buy Bitcoin at 69,000. And by the way, I did, and I think it'll be a perfectly good buy with time, you know, with a low time preference. But, you know, like if you're still in the game, people seem to forget how these cycles work. Yeah, a lot of that stuff won't come back, but a lot of it's going to rip again. You know what I mean? So like you shouldn't have sold it at the bottom just because somebody claimed it's dead necessarily. You should have sold it at the top. But so I think, yeah, staying in the game, like Raul and I talk about all this all the time because we both have a bunch of those coins that we kind of rode through the cycles and they're somewhat, we call them our dust, you know, but they're options. They're like options on the next bull market. Like one of those, for sure, some of those you're going to wake up one day and it's going to be like up 50x. And you'll be like, why? And you're going to sell it. Yeah. Just be like, oh, yeah, it took me 3 years, but who cares? Yeah, maybe I could have done better on something else, but I got in or I got out or whatever.
I remember those charts from when I came in 2020, 2021. So I remember seeing those charts, you know, like huge move. And then it's just like dead for years. And then you see it start to move again. Like, there'll be a few of those that
yeah, I don't think everything will. I think I've got a lot of things that won't even be worth like the Ethereum fee to go on a DEX and dump them. But I think that some of them are going to come raging back. Alluvium is one of them, by the way. You mentioned Alluvium earlier. Like I held that shit through this entire cycle and here we go. You know?
Yeah, the ups and downs. And I think you mentioned three examples right there of times you've had to persevere from when you've lost a lot of money or relatively a lot of money for the time you're at in your financial journey. So for some of our viewers that may have taken some massive L's on the recent bear market, what would you say the biggest thing to bounce back? Like, how do you bounce back from those spots? You've done it multiple times already, so you must have something.
It's hard. It took me a long time after the last one. I mean, I would say you just need to start finding a way to get back in the game, even if it's very small. First of all, you have to write off the loss mentally forever. Like there's nothing worse than like some line that you had in your mind that you need to reattain because you're going to push and you're going to make bad decisions. You need to like take stock of where you're at right now and approach it as if you're fresh to the market for the first time, right? Like the scars and PTSD of losses of previous markets will never allow you to, I think, make rational decisions and come back. So like, I don't know, start dollar cost averaging into something that you like. Start getting some money, start putting a little aside from the paycheck if you're completely broke, whatever. But like, you just need to get back in the market, I think, you know, and you need to do it. I think I just really discourage people who have taken losses thinking they needed to like get it back in that one trade. You know, you're just going to get wrecked every single time. Like that's never going to work. And so I think just taking a longer term approach saying, hey man, maybe this bull market really is 2025. You know, so like, I just need to get some capital into this market, or maybe I'm going to take just the money I don't need till 2030 and start getting that into the market. Like, I don't think if you've taken massive losses trading that you should like start using high leverage to turn your $1,000 into $100,000, right? Because we know that you're just going to turn your $1,000 to zero 99.9% of the time. I would also tell people liquidation is not a stop loss. Like, I see people, how do you even get liquidated? Really?
Well, leverage, I think.
That's your answer. Why don't you use it? Like, if you even understand how the insurance funds and stuff work, like, why don't you even just put a stop loss $10 above your stop and not get liquidated? You know what I mean? Like, just practical things like that. Like, people just, they look at their liquidation and they're like, oh, that's when I'm out. That's the end of the game.
I hope I picked a good level, the right leverage slider right
not,
there.
Not how this works. You know what I mean? And so,
I think, gambling, I guess.
Yeah, I think you got to just get, I think you got to, take stock of where you're at, really, versus where you were, and think, hey, if I was just starting this for the first time, what would I do? You know, and build it from there.
Yeah, it was something that I even said to myself the other day. It was just like, you just can't lose money in a bull market. Like, you just cannot be getting to yourself positions where you're going to lose money in a bull, or you can lose big amounts. Like, because the way that this trades is how you just said, like, it's like poker. Once you start becoming a bigger stack, you can start taking less risk and it becomes easier and easier. If you lose it all, then people get into that mindset of like, right, I need to up the leverage to some crazy level to get back to that level. And you end up having to play like you're a short stack to actually be the best at doing it again. I just think you just make sure you're not losing money
because there is one thing now,
this could really roll.
Yeah, there's one thing that's different this time that I think is sad, and it's sort of been my argument for the pain trade is up, and that is all of the contagion and all these bankruptcies and all these people who got flushed for reasons outside of their own risk management, right? Like, for me, like, it doesn't matter where a stop loss was or what happened, that money that I lost is gone. All these FTX creditors, like Voyager, Celsius, all those, they were mostly retail. You know, people who thought that their money was safe in a bank and they lost it there. But when you get to FTX, and I hope they get completely made whole, which would be great, but that was a lot of institutions, a lot of the people who were like trading this market professionally or even as retail were full-time traders. This is what they did. Those people lost their entire stack and are watching the market go up and don't have the capital because it literally got stolen from them, right? That's an element that we didn't have in the same way, I think, in previous markets. That's been, I think, probably brutal for a lot of people mentally, because you could have been trading your ass off, massively successful throughout that entire market, and then you see it disappear all at once because of something you couldn't control, like the unknown. You know, we talk about the known knowns. That's an unknown. And so you didn't expect that. You couldn't see. There's plenty of people who will now go back and dunk. And there were a few people warning, obviously, about SBF and stuff. But the majority of people, myself included, thought he was like, you know, this genius who was going to save the market and stuff. I had the guy on my show 5-6 times, along with I never had some of them, but like had Mashinsky on my show plenty of times, had Steve Ehrlich on my show. Nine times. The SBF, we used to like just jokingly send him like a link sometimes, and he would just like bomb the show for 3 minutes on his beanbag. Once, I'll never remember. I forget. Like, one of the times I had like Mark Yusko and a couple guys. He tried to get on. He couldn't get his mic to work. And then all we heard was fuck, and his camera went off and like he never showed back up. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm not proud of it now, but also like you can't. Hindsight is 20/20. I thought the guy was fucking great. I mean, he was jittery as shit and a lot of keyboard clicking. It's all the memes that we've heard about him. They were 100% true, right? I mean, the guy, you know, he was heavily on Adderall, certainly, but he seemed brilliant, you know, and he was like the guest you wanted to get. You're talking to like the youngest, like multi-billionaire in the world. Like, people want me to be ashamed of the fact that I had him on at those points and stuff, but I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, and when you have 2,000, 3,000 guests and they're all in crypto, 1% of them are going to end up making you look really bad in the future. You know what I mean? It's pretty much been proven here. It sucks, but I thought the guy was a genius.
Yeah.
And so did Tom Brady. So, you know, whatever.
Last bull runs, geniuses of this market's, you know, villains.
They all got taken out. Yeah.
Who's on your list of people that you like put up there as the people that you're really really listen to, or like who should people be following? You think you obviously speak to a lot of people. So who are the people you're trying to get on the show?
Yeah. I mean, I do like Raul a lot. I think he's obvious. I think that Sailor is great for people who are coming in entry level and who just want to get really, really excited about buying Bitcoin. Like I know he doesn't want it to be a gateway drug that leads you to these other things, but I think obviously a lot of people come into Bitcoin and then find the rest of the crypto market. I mean, I really want to get like the big politicians and regulators and stuff on the show to sort of try to educate them and get them in. Like I've been trying to get Elizabeth Warren, but I think like calling her like a dirty slut on Twitter is probably not going to get her onto my show.
Hester Pierce is going to be
all. So Hester, I've had like 4 or 5 times. She's like one of the greatest interviews ever. People, you know, we shit on the SEC, but I think it's like important. A lot of these regulatory agencies have brilliant people there. It's just not the chairman. Like the SEC has done great things over time. This SEC happens to suck because of one guy, right? But if he's gone and Hester Peirce comes in, we're going to all be like on our knees praying to the gods of the SEC every single day, because it's going to be exactly what we want to hear. So I think it's important to realize there'll be turnover there. I mean, I obviously have Crypto Town Hall with Ran and Mario, and we get a lot of like incredible guests there. Honestly, I don't really hold any specific person on a pedestal. I try to get just a very well-rounded view. I've never had Vitalik. I would love to interview him. He's one of them. I'm trying to think. There's a couple. Kathy Wood, I've been trying to get forever, and that hasn't happened, and I would really, really love to interview her. Otherwise, now, like, I would really love to start getting all these, like, athletes and celebrities who are superficially kind of into crypto and get them on and try to convince them to double down a lot harder. I have access to a lot of them, but they're all like the government now. Like, they got wrecked or they looked like idiots and none of them want to talk about it anymore. So we need price to go up some higher. Actually, what we need is the NFT market to get hot again so that we can get, like, Steph Curry and all those dudes to start talking about NFTs again.
Yeah, no, I think I wrote a list of NFTs Odell Beckham should buy on Up Only when I was on it and gave it to him. And if he bought those, he's down, like, 99.99%. So he might be one of those people who are scarred.
Dude, so talk about wrecked. That dude took his salary in Bitcoin. Yeah. Okay, so I'm not talking about the price of Bitcoin. What people didn't realize about how bad of a decision that was, and because the United States sucks so bad, I don't, like, take your salary in Bitcoin and ride it forever. You're going to make so much money on that salary. The problem is when you take your salary in Bitcoin in the United States, you owe your 40% taxes on that right now. So if you don't realize any of those gains from Bitcoin, he literally took a salary in Bitcoin at like 60 grand. Whatever, let's say it was, you know, 10 million bucks. It wasn't. But so he owed, you know, 4 million in taxes. He had to come out of pocket somewhere for 4 million in taxes and then watch his Bitcoin go from 10 million to being worth 3 million.
You know, that's
right. So he played football for a year to lose $1 million if he didn't sell 40% of the Bitcoin, which is taxable transact. Right. So like you can't, because of the tax regime, because the second he got paid in Bitcoin, it doesn't matter if it's Bitcoin or dollars and he owed that 40%. Dude, that guy got absolutely rinsed.
Really good point, because that's something that I remember. Actually, I remember, and I'll remember for all the next bull markets, is the year after the bull run ends, so many people go bankrupt because of that exact thing. They get paid some huge amount in crypto, normally like via income, or they've sold some coin, and then that coin goes down 80% and they still owe taxes on the original sum. And the amount of people that I saw, and projects and protocols, which are just like, yeah, we're just completely screwed. So like, it's something that
that's a good lesson for the next cycle.
Yeah, you need to be careful of, like, if you're in a tax jurisdiction, just know the year after that price dips like 60-70%, like, you're going to get absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, I had friends in that sort of the 18-19, you know, that run when things went really, really bad, and some I think on this run as well, who, you know, literally were like, I made millions of dollars and then it was worth 100 grand. They were like, shit, I owe $1 million, and had to like declare bankruptcy, like you said, literally just to pay the taxes on gains they never even realized. But that, I mean, that would happen if someone paid you in stock as well. That's not necessarily unique to crypto, but I think that it just happened a lot more in this space. I mean, you can get completely fucked by the tax side of this. And I think wash trading will probably get eliminated as well. You know, the fact that you can sort of, harvest tax mm-hmm. harvest losses and stuff like that. So it's gonna become a lot more like other markets. It sucks to be in crypto in the United States, because you also like effectively get double taxed. You know, if you're trading altcoins, every time you're in and out, you're not only buying something, but you're selling something. you know, because they don't view, you know, if you're holding Bitcoin and you flip, or you're holding ETH and you're trading on a DEX and you're flipping into NFTs or whatever, you're selling the ETH, not just buying the NFT. So you've got a taxable transaction on the buy, and people don't realize that. You put it into the software and you're just like, can't believe how much you owe in taxes. Talk about wrecked for all the people who had these bankruptcies. So I had to pay. So there was interest in the Voyagers and the Celsius and all those, right? So I was taking profit from things, it in Voyager as my account in USDC to earn interest. I paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes on the interest and gains in Voyager, and then it all got removed by Voyager. So not only did I lose the money, I paid taxes on literally all of it, and the government doesn't give a single shit about that. So yeah. I lost a lot more than what I lost, right?
Yeah, I'm based in Portugal. Like they've only really just come up with rules this year, but it's a lot of European places are like, you, if you hold it for a year, you don't get taxed, which I actually think was quite good. But it's, you're all going to have these different tax regimes. It does feel like the US is, because of all the short term trading stuff, like you can get eviscerated on this stuff.
It's just not worth it. Yeah, that was a huge part of also the way that I've sort of structured the way that I approach the market, because it's just like, even trying to figure out if you made money is hard.
Yeah, it's literally like there's no advantage to short term trading in the US. You just get completely raped.
And I love when people are like, just move to Portugal, bro. Like, as if the United States government gives a shit that my ass is in Portugal, you know, like I still owe the taxes. It's the only place you can go right now as an American is Puerto Rico, obviously, because you're still in the United States, but you get the 4%, but it's only on what you make in the future. So you can't come there wealthy and avoid taxes. So you have to believe that you're going to do it in the future. It's a huge move. And now you really have to like live there. Like if you have kids, they want you to sell your house in the continental United States and put your kids in school in Puerto Rico. It used to be that you could just have an address there, get a little bit of mail sent there, sit there for 6 months on the beach. Your kids could go live their life. You can't do that anymore. And I think they're going to try to get rid of it, to be honest, altogether. So there's just really nowhere an American can go to hide from America. They'll get you for 10 years. Even if you like give up your citizenship, people are like, get up your citizenship, move to Portugal. If you have a certain amount of money already, they'll just keep collecting the taxes for this long period before you're out. It's insane.
Yeah, it's literally, you can just go to a tax advantageous state, but I mean, it doesn't even
really matter. I live in Florida. That's the best I can basically do, right?
Yeah, same here.
All right, well, we'll move on to the final questions. This has been a great chat, actually. I didn't know that. Well, I've read in the show notes, but I didn't realize that you were a DJ before this. So, like, that's a really cool arc for like viewers. I don't know if many people in the space now know, because you're such a like a ingrained into the, I don't know, the crypto community. I think now that like people won't have known you as a 50k followers and having that DJ scene, but like,
I was a lot better at DJing than I ever was at trading.
Sure. He really spun it up.
So we've kind of touched on it before, but the final, this is Wrecked Radio. We always ask, what would you tell our viewers not to get wrecked? You've touched on a few of those already, but yeah, maybe just some closing comments.
I mean, I would say that especially if you're relatively new, And I say this a lot, I was saying in the last cycle, I don't think you need to find the thing that does that 1000x or whatever it is, right? Like getting that expectation, watching the people who do that, believing that that means you're going to do it as well, is just a way to lose a shit ton of money and probably get absolutely destroyed. I would say actually, if you want to capture the like part of the move on NFTs or metaverse or whatever these narratives that we like believe might happen, just get a position in all the layer ones and the layer twos that you like, right? Because like if Solana becomes the gaming coin, Solana will go up massively. Maybe Solana does a 10 or 20X. And yes, you'll miss the gaming coin that did 100, but you should be pretty fucking happy if you make a 10 or 20X. So I think really starting slow and looking at the infrastructure and getting in on what could benefit. So you don't need to pick that exact winner and play the lottery, but you can, you know, accrue some of the gains from wherever it is. I think that's probably the best approach into the next cycle. I mean, I'm even taking that approach to some degree. I'll definitely have my degen plays, but I still think the bulk of your portfolio should be kind of in the bigger, larger cap things that could really capture the value of whatever's built on them.
Appreciate it, Scott. Yeah, no, I think that was good advice. I think there's a lot of good advice given out this whole show, really. If you want to stick around, we're going to do those Rollbit loot box bins. Hell, you can watch some people win some share right now. Mando, if you want to start getting that ready, I'll call out these codes. Hopefully it goes off without a hitch. It's always a little clunky, but our first code is Melker2351. Melker2351. Okay, that's the first one. The second code's Wolf9913. Wolf9913. And I know that Rollbit just launched the Duel Arena too. I don't know, Amanda, have you been in there yet? I got to get in there.
Potentially, we're going to change how we do some of the prizes next week. So we're going to maybe do two people come up from the audience
some,
for a
duel some arena. Duels?
Oh, we're going to do some duels, I think.
It's been an internal call. I never heard about this, but I like that.
No,
right, do you have this ticker ready?
A little chat. I think that's what we're going to try and do. But this week, we'll do the loot boxes. Next week, it might be a different
format. That's actually great. No, I like that. Yeah. Let's definitely do that. It was my idea.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got here? All right, if you hear your name, please request on Twitter Spaces. Intern, can you make me a co-host? There we go. You've got the co-host. Request on Twitter Spaces if you hear your name. Do not before that, please. Mino, draw like 8 of them, please. Or who is this? Is this intern? All right, Bill Memecoin, Unbroken Fit. Bill Memecoin, Unbroken Fit. Please request. It could be Bad Crystal.
Crystal. I think that's Crystal.
I think it's Crystal, right?
And then... Betty App.
Kind of like Betty
Wap's cousin.
Doesn't sound like a person, that does it?
I got Bill Memecoin. We got one of them.
Bad Crystal.
And then we need Bad Crystal and Betty Wap. Betty App. Come on. You got a couple more seconds here before we move on.
We'll have Kyle Rich, if not.
Kyle Rich. All right. Whoever clicks first out of these. And how about Learn to GM Potato Gun? Whoever gets in here first, we'll get you up on stage.
Learn to
get
there's
Bad Crystal. We just need one more.
So all the good usernames are clearly taken at this stage.
Where are they appearing? Like, where are these people?
They're on Twitter Spaces. The non-live video one, the other one.
I see Kyle Rich. We have him up.
Kyle Rich, grab his ass. Where is he?
Don't grab his ass, man.
Did you get him, Mando? All right, we're good. We're set. We got 3.
You got him?
Bill, then Bad Crystal, and Crystal, sorry. And then Kyle Rich. So, Mando, you ready to spin these?
I'm ready to spin. Let me just...
Everyone, you guys here, viewers? Let's hear them talk a little bit. Okay.
All right.
They're live. They're real people. No robots.
See my screen? Yeah.
I mean, AI is pretty advanced. So. Let's go. This one's for Bill. We're spinning.
Oh shit! Someone won Nakamigo.
Won a Nakamigo.
Very rare Nakamigo. That is $7,000.
Congratulations, Bill.
For real?
Yeah.
Let's fucking go. All right. Next person, Kyle. No, this one's for Bad Crystal.
Okay. Bad let's Crystal. Love the name. Let's go. Rek Guy.
Rek Guy bid support.
Bid
support.
Floor is lower.
Wow, floor is low.
Unbelievable.
Kyle Rich. This one's for Kyle Rich. This one's gonna be like a fucking fidenza, right? It has to be.
Oh, a little Thanksgiving present.
No, I don't know. Let's see.
Oh wow.
It doesn't look like it's gonna be a fidenza.
It was nearly.
It's a robot. Formula One robot. You just missed Vegas Formula One, but I think they have a couple a year.
So all right.
There you go. That's actually a solid robot.
Solid prizes. Nothing crazy. We got
nothing crazy. Prizes. Make sure you guys message the Wrecked Radio account with your ETH addresses, not an exchange address, not your Robit address, but an ETH address to Wrecked Radio if you won those prizes, and we'll get those sorted out. I don't know. It was a great show. I mean, happy holidays. I did before we did the spins.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, this was awesome. Thanks a lot, Scott. Obviously, follow Scott on Wolf of Wall Street. He also does one of the best known podcasts and a daily show in the space. So make sure you're following all of that. It's been great having you. Great chat. Thanks. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. It's an honor. Really fun.
Yeah, man. Have a good one.
All right, DJ together.
Later, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.